My, oh my, what an amazing game by Joel Embiid last night. And should I even say the 76ers, or should I just say the Philadelphia Joel Embiids, to use that old tired cliche? Like, in the baseball version of it, would be like the Bugs Bunny a million years ago cartoon. Leading off, Bugs Bunny. Playing center field, Bugs Bunny. Playing second, Bugs Bunny. Play third, Bugs Bunny. Catching, Bugs Bunny. Pitching, Bugs Bunny. Joel Embiid did it all last night. And I agree with Doc Rivers, and we'll let you hear from Doc himself. Doc today, not Duck today. We'll let you hear from Doc Rivers about Joel Embiid and what his MVP did last night. Doc Rivers speaking glowingly of Joel Embiid's performance, because really those are the only adjectives, those are the only type of vibes you can throw at what he did last night. All over the court, scoring more than half his team's points in the basketball game last night against the Boston Celtics. And the Sixers, unfortunately, needed every ounce of those points to get by a shorthanded Celtics team. But ain't the question. Joel Embiid last night dazzled. That was the best game I've ever seen Joel Embiid play, period. The fact that he did it on both ends of the court to that extent, and then he did something in this particular game with great regularity that we rarely see from Joel Embiid. Exploding to the hoop. Now, he had the opportunity to do so, and certainly Al Horford is not the thorn in his side that Al Horford used to be for Joel Embiid. But what Joel Embiid was able to do in last night's game was consistently attack the hoop. We rarely see Joel Embiid throughout a game explode to the hoop. We'll see Euro steps. We'll see him get fouled before he has the opportunity maybe to explode to the hole. But what he was able to do last night was consistently attack. He had a bevy. I don't even know how many little baby jumpers in the paint that he was knocking down with great regularity, but he was knocking them down with consistency. We have seen that. We have rarely seen him attack the rim the way he did last night. We rarely see him explode from the top of the key or the foul line to the rim and slam it home with great authority. That was, to me, something that jumped out in his game last night that we don't see as often as maybe we'd like to. But the bottom line is, however he got him, whether it was with great aggression or it was little fadeaway jumpers, little baby jumpers, whatever it was, at the foul line, however he got him, who gives a damn? 52 points against the Boston Celtics is one hell of a performance. And just to put that in the perspective, the history behind what Joel Embiid did last night, listen to this. First center with 3 50-point games in a season since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the 1971-1972 season. Kareem had 5 50-point games that season. Hey, Joel Embiid still got 3 games left. It was the second game this season where he scored more than half his team's points, most by any player since James Harden in the 2018-2019 season and Kobe Bryant in the 06-07 season. Oh my goodness. Those guys have been MVPs of the league. Isn't that crazy? And then how about this? Most points in a season by a center since Shaq in the 1999-2000 season. So I think I agree with Doc Rivers when Doc Rivers said what he had to say after the game last night. Take a listen.
But what we did right was Joel Embiid. And if the MVP race is over, I'm really, like, tonight, we couldn't make shots. We had guys making shots, with open shots. The man just scored half our points in the NBA game. And I'm biased, but the MVP race is over.
I'm biased, but the MVP race, I think it's over as well. Joker had 14 points last night. Joel Embiid also had 6 assists in last night's win as well. It was absolutely dazzling, a phenomenal performance, and they needed them. I mean, yesterday I go on this rant about what the Sixers need to really win in the playoffs, and one of the guys I mentioned was, of course, Tyrese Maxey, playing at a high level that we've seen him play at for the majority of this season. We need to see a guy like Tobias Harris step up. We need to see him be a 3-and-D guy on steroids, right, where he's not just a 3-and-D guy, but he can also work in attacking the paint, attacking the rim, slash a little bit. Step in with a nice mid-range game, at least. That wasn't there last night for either of those two players. The guy that stepped up last night was PJ Tucker, who sunk three threes in the final 3 minutes, each one more clutch than the next, all in the corner, by the way. Playoff PJ Tucker is the guy I was talking about yesterday. You got that defensively for PJ Tucker last night, and then you got the offensive numbers from him in the final 3 minutes of the game when you needed to seal off this victory for the Sixers. You finally get a win against the Celtics this year. Fantastic. Celtics have been shorthanded before this season, and you lost that game. Much thanks to Blake Griffin knocking down, what was it, 7 threes in that game? Good Lord. And then this game rolls around. They're shorthanded again, but this time at home, you're able to, despite what the refs were trying to give the Celtics with some ticky-tack calls at the end of that game, Sixers were able to hold off and get the win. Clutch win. For them, like I said, you're most likely not going to be catching the Celtics when it comes to a playoff seeding scenario here. But in terms of locking up an MVP for your center, it'd be nice to get that award for your big man and then build some more momentum as the season winds down. Miami still on the schedule. Brooklyn still on the schedule. And Atlanta between those two as the season winds down this week. I don't know what was most impressive to you guys last night about Joel Embiid's performance. But to me, other than just the fact that he scored the 52 points, seeing him in the paint as much as he was and attacking the rim from the paint, quick first step that we all know he has. We all know he's got great footwork, especially on the offensive end of the floor. But what he did last night was next level. We've been dazzled by a 7-footer with Euro steps before. To see him explode the way he did with that type of quickness to the rim is something that really stuck out to me about last night's performance. It's the best I've ever seen it from Joel Embiid. And that might be the best game I've ever seen him play. In terms of versatility, oh, that's pretty damn good. That's pretty damn good for what he did last night. To think 3 50-point games in a season. Career highs, 59 points, dropped 52 last night. The fact that the Sixers as a team scored 103 and he had 52, that's like that Steve Carlton stat about the Phillies where they won, what was it, 57 games in the season or 54 games in the season and he won 27 of them. Like, that's just like, all right, everyone step aside. Joel Embiid is going to come in and do his thing. And he's going to dominate. And boy, did he dominate last night. Absolutely amazed by what the big man was able to put forth in last night's game in South Philadelphia. Happy to see that. One other thing about last night's game that I got to go back to here is that James Harden was another guy I talked about yesterday. And I said that I got confidence he's going to score, he's going to get his assists and all that stuff, and that's great. And last night he had 20 and 10, another double-double. That's fine. That's great. Fantastic. Another double-double for James Harden. Especially with not a lot of guys scoring, for him to get 10 assists is very good. The fact that he did not have a single turnover in last game, those are the numbers that jumped out to me. If there were three numbers to highlight from last night's game, it's a 52 from Joel Embiid. It's three from PJ Tucker with those three threes in the final 3 minutes. And then it's zero. Zero turnovers for James Harden in last night's game. Hopefully that's a trend that's going to continue. I'd like to get used to that more so than the 5 or 6 turnovers that we have seen in the last week that he's played a basketball, where hopefully that wouldn't become a trend. And last night's game was a nice little buck to that trend. And if he can control the basketball, if he can have crisp passes, if he can not dribble lazily, if he can not look lethargic with behind the back passes and whatever, then that'll be a great sign for the Sixers when the playoffs eventually do roll around. As much as the Bucks loss really hit my confidence when it came to this team potentially making it out of the second round of the playoffs. Last night shouldn't have done much considering the Celtics are shorthanded, but if you're going to get a performance like that from Joel Embiid and you're going to get clutch shooting down the stretch from guys like PJ Tucker, I don't think you're going to have another 5-point game from Tyrese Maxey for a while, so that'll make me feel a little bit better about Tyrese Maxey. But when it comes to all that stuff being thrown at the Celtics last night and the Sixers finding a way to win despite the shorthanded Celtics, that makes me feel a little bit more confident about being able to pull out a second-round victory and advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's the way my emotion will be going for the very near future as we watch basketball here in Philly with our 10-9-8-76ers. Sixers get a little bit of time off now. they'll be back at it tomorrow when they take on the Heat. So that'll be a nice one. That'll be a fun one there for themselves. And that game will be, I believe, their final home game of the season. Yeah. And that'll be tomorrow night, 7:30 in South Philadelphia. So keep your fingers crossed for that one. The Philadelphia Phillies, ladies and gentlemen, are no longer winless. Huh? And just like you thought, Matt Strom would get the start and get the Phillies' first win of the season, just like you thought on opening day. The first win of the season would go to Matt Strom. He doesn't get credit for the win. He only pitched four innings. However, he was the guy on the bump. Strom and Falter have been your two best pitchers so far this season. That's fun, right? Cool. But the Phillies get the 4-1 victory over the Yankees last night. Kyle Schwarber went yard for the first time this season, which is just fantastic. Happy to see that. But absolutely loved what I saw from Schwarber at the plate. He was 2-for-5 with that home run, two RBIs. Home run was a solo shot. Brandon Marsh helped get the Phillies on the board again with a solo home run as well. Got the Phillies the 2-0 lead. Strom went 4 scoreless. And then you also had Bryson Stott. You had Cave. Who else was it? Cave, Realmuto. I'm blanking. Damn it. Multi-hit games galore for the Phillies is all you need to know. And this is the thing that it can help really turn the vibes around regarding the Phillies. When it comes to the Phillies, going 0-for-4, being the first team since the World Series, first team in, let's see, in 38 years, to go to a World Series and then be 0-4 to start the next season, that's not exactly a great confidence booster, all right? But it also doesn't set the tone for the entire season. It might set our mood for the week. But if the Phillies are able to pull out somehow, magically, if the Phillies are able to pull out a series win over the Yankees today, that would help vibes before opening day. Yeah, sure, you got swept in your opening series, but then you won your next series at least against the Yankees. Then you come home on Thursday for your opener, and then all just feels right with the world after that. And that's the feeling that we all want. The other thing about last night's game, it was clean. It was a clean game. Brandon Marsh looked great again in center field. You got great pitching, whether that be your opener or your starter, really, in Strom. Guys came out of the bullpen and did their job for the most part. Kimbrel got hit a little bit when he came in, but overall was able to help seal the win for the Phillies. But now it's an opportunity here for the Phillies to go out there on the bump with one of their supposed aces in Aaron Nola. And hopefully he can handle his business today against Gerrit Cole as they wrap up their series. Afternoon game today at Yankee Stadium, so I look forward to seeing what they're able to do in that regard. So that's one thing that I'm looking forward to seeing from the Phillies. Is a win today, another win today. By the way, Kyle Schwarber's home run was also his 200th of his career. So good for Kyle Schwarber and seeing him get that milestone for the Phils and for himself, obviously. Jeff Mosher is going to join us in just a minute to talk all things Eagles, the draft as well. The buzzword culture that I've talked about a lot certainly has picked up more steam when talking about other acquisitions that the Eagles have made. But there's one question that I really tried to address. And it's a great mystery. And I know a lot of times people will throw out a name that somebody has worked with, like Sean Desai and Vic Fangio, for instance. The thing that really gets me when you talk about how he has been around, how someone has been around coaches that have accomplished a lot. Vic Fangio, for instance, you know, helped coach the 49ers into a Super Bowl with a great defense. Of course, he was good with the Bears. He struggled as a head coach with the Broncos when he got his opportunity to do that. But just defensively speaking, he has brought in this school, and Jonathan Gannon was certainly a part of that school. And you've heard that reference many times before. That Vic Fangio's school of thought and his philosophy is what Jonathan Gannon really adapted, and it's what the Eagles tried to do leading up to the Super Bowl for 2 weeks, hiring Vic Fangio as their defensive consultant leading up to the game against the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, especially in that second half. But the mystery here is, what are going to be the fingerprints that Sean Desai puts on that defense? And I don't mean it to sound condescending, But, like, what is he going to do? Is it going to be the carbon copy of Jonathan Gannon, or is he going to put his own fingerprints on this defense? There is going to be something in this defense that is very much Sean Desai and not at all Jonathan Gannon. And those will be the fingerprints of Sean Desai, obviously. But what is going to be his spin on this defense? When Nick Sirianni was asked about it last week at the owners' meetings, he was like, "Oh, it's going to be his own thing, and but it's going to be a lot of the same philosophy and all that stuff." Like, no specifics, as you would expect. You're not expecting him to give you the recipe, the secret sauce, not in the offseason, not ever. So what are those fingerprints going to be? What is the spin going to be for a guy like Sean Desai? How is he going to have adjustments in-game? And I think most people, and if you are building up your defensive line, if somehow magically a guy like Jalen Carter falls to 10 and the Eagles are there and they pick him up, and then the Eagles do other things to add to their defensive line later in the draft, or a guy like Milton Williams has a breakout season, I don't know. Any of these things that could happen. What is Sean Desai going to do if all of a sudden that rush isn't getting home like it was last year throughout the season? What is he going to do if, let's say, you're playing a game like that was played in the Super Bowl and you're not able to get after the quarterback? What's the adjustment you're going to make? What are you going to do in that game? Are you going to do what a lot of people want you to do? Our friend Seth Joyner, for instance, and blitz, 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 blitz. Are you going to dial up a nice little safety blitz to get after the quarterback? Are you going to send your linebackers an all out? What are you going to do? What are you going to do when stuff's hitting the fan and the game plan doesn't work, and for whatever reason, they move their chess pieces in a better spot than you moved your chess pieces, and you got to make some kind of adjustment? That's the biggest question that needs to be answered. I think schematically, we're going to see like 90% of what we saw last year. The 10% is going to be huge. The little things are going to be huge when it comes to Sean Desai, because Jonathan Gannon could have been a very beloved defensive coordinator, but it's that 10% right there that he struggled in. That 10% is the in-game adjustment. Game plan? Hey, Hassan Reddick's eaten. Brandon Graham's eaten. You got a guy like Josh Sweat eaten. You got Javon Hargrave eaten. All these guys are getting after the quarterback, and you don't have to dial up any blitzes. Oh, okay, you look pretty damn good. But what happens when those blitzes, those five-man rushes or four-man rushes aren't getting home and you're not getting that pressure? You're not having the quarterback think about, oh, well, I might have Hassan Reddick coming around the corner here. I might have Josh Sweat coming around the other side. I might have Javon Hargrave blowing up the guy in front of him, and he might be just coming straight for me. What's going to happen when that's not getting home like it wasn't getting home in the Super Bowl? What's the adjustment that you make? That's ultimately where I think Sean Desai is going to be judged by Eagles fans. I mean, overall, I expect this defense still to be pretty damn good. But when you're not having the success that you had for the vast majority of the season, where's the adjustment? Where's the defensive audible? What do you call? How do you deploy your players when they're not winning their one-on-one battles? What direction is this defense going to go when it's not working? That's the question I'll get into with Jeff Mosher. He's got an interesting take on it because I know a lot of people are curious. There's not a huge resume here with Sean Desai. He's been a defensive coordinator once. Defense wasn't off the charts incredible. Certainly wasn't off the charts incredible to the point where it got him another defensive coordinator job in the NFL. He went and was a guy behind the scenes more than anything in Seattle. So what is this that we're getting here with this defense? I know we're expecting a lot of what we saw from Jonathan Gannon, but when it's not working, what's he going to do? That's going to be the biggest question that's going to be surrounding our new guy, Sean Desai. So I look forward to seeing what comes of it there. Coming up in a minute, we'll get to our friend Jeff Mosher. But right now, let me tell you about my man Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. For over 40 years, Steven's been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people get engaged and fall in love. So do what I do, ladies and gentlemen. When it comes to your jewelry purchases, trust one man, the man with the perfect price. Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price, the perfect price. Online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. What do you get there? Not only do you get the perfect price, but you also get treated like a real jewelry by a real family member, by a real jewelry expert at Steven Singer Jewelers. You don't have to worry about the stuff that always bothers people about the haggling or the negotiating. No pressure sales at Steven Singer Jewelers. And you'll be dazzled by their amazing diamond inventory. It is something that is spectacular, and you'll have to see for yourself. One place, one price, perfect price online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Did I not mention Joel Embiid being 20 for 25 from the floor? Did I not mention that? Scusi. I'll get to the rest of the chat, of course, in the chat check a little bit later in the show. But yeah, Joel Embiid, 20 of 25 shooting, 12 for 13 from the foul line. That was the night that he had last night. It was spectacular. Nothing short of spectacular for the Sixers big man. And I'm ready for more. And when I say I'm ready for more, I hope we see this as the playoffs get closer and the first round commences and the second round is heating up. And we're wondering whether or not we're going to see that second round exit or we're going to see this team actually make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and finally make it past the point that you were at when the process began, which was game 7 of an Eastern Conference Finals against the Boston Celtics that the Sixers lost with Andre Iguodala and Doug Collins. Following year, they were terrible, and then they started the process. So let's cross our fingers that this is finally the moment where the 76ers will actually get out of that second round. And by the way, it's another thing that I found interesting about last night's game. McDaniels off the bench. The Sixers have had so many different scorers off the bench to really help them. Like George Niang has been a leading scorer off the bench. Paul Reed has been a leading scorer off the bench. Daniel House recently has been a leading scorer to help them off the bench. And last night it was Josh McDaniels. It was McDaniels helping the Sixers out in the way that they did. And that's what I need to see on a more consistent basis from him. I'd love to see that kind of scoring from him coming off the bench on the more with great regularity, more so than what we saw last night. More of what we saw last night, I should say. Jalen McDaniels last night, by the way, 10 points off the bench for the 76ers, or excuse me, 8 points off the bench for the Sixers, a couple of rebounds for him as well. Without further ado, let's jump on the Rothman Orthopedics guest line, get to our friend Jeff Mosher to talk all things Eagles. Right now, from inside the birds, wait for it, Empire, our friend Jeff Mosher joins us. What's up, Mosh?
Mark, what's going on, brother?
Same old here. Let me tell you this. You've talked to your fair share of athletes. I've talked to a good number of athletes. It drives me nuts now in this day and age when so many athletes are now hosts, like the Kelce brothers and the New Heights podcast and all that stuff. And they did a great job with Howie Roseman. They get things out of Howie that like you and I couldn't get out of Howie, unfortunately. Do you get any of that little, I don't know, that little the competitive twinge in you when you see those guys get everything out of Howie?
I laugh because I think a lot of Eagles media would tell you they haven't gotten a lot out of Howie in several years, but,
really, I know it drives me crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, does it mean we all have to work a little harder? Sure. But on the flip side, I'm probably going to be out of the business because of athletes doing their own podcasts in about 3 years. So everybody subscribe to my Phillies podcast now because those guys aren't all into the podcast realm yet.
That's true. That's true. They're paid so much and it's guaranteed. They don't need a job after their career's over. Right, exactly. Now that's like Fox is knocking on their door or something like that. Anyway, in all seriousness, though, we talked on this show briefly about the T.O. saga. And that's one of the things that Howie had talked about was that he was actually on a plane with Terrell Owens when all that hit the fan. When you look back on that, do you have someone that you put most blame on, like Donovan or T.O. or Joe Banner or Jeffrey Lurie or even Andy Reid? Do you look back on that and say there's more blame to go on one person than anybody else?
So I feel like I had to play psychologist a lot during that saga those years. And
that's
by the
great,
way,
that's a great way to explain it.
I got on the beat in 2005. And 2006 was sort of my first year as an Eagles beat reporter.
Okay.
Five, I was like general assignment. So what a welcome to the NFL that whole era was for me. So here's how I feel about it, Mark. I think that a lot of the I would say the smaller faction that favored T.O. wishes it could have gone differently on from both ends. Nobody has ever told me it's all Donovan's fault, it's all Terrell Owens' fault. I don't think anybody in their right mind could just assign blame 100% to one person out of all that, or Joe Banner or anything, right? But the people who fall on the side of they should have worked it out, they should have helped T.O. more, are the people who also think that that should have happened because it was their best chance to win.
Right.
So knowing that that's an important caveat, of course you want to win. The whole point is to win. But when that's sort of the reason why we keep this guy, or we make him happy, or Donovan's got to acquiesce to him, is because we want to win, not because it's the right thing to do, not because you're wrong and he's right, but more that we just want to make this guy happy, stop complaining, stop throwing team under the bus. To me, that's almost a flawed logic. I mean, of course, we all should want to win, but you're talking about competitors now, two of 53 who all, I mean, Donovan wants to win too. And so if the only rationale was make T.O. happy because that'll get us to the win, well, that's not guaranteed. You're not guaranteed to win just because you had T.O. He played in the Super Bowl and they lost the game and he played great, right? So I always look at that situation and say, of course, everybody could have done a little bit better as far as, and everybody learned something from it. But it's hard for me not to have looked at that situation and say, Terrell Owens was the one who made that divorce and split happen. It was his behavior that caused it. And to blame other people for not necessarily knowing, especially Donovan, right? Not knowing how to react to it or not placating him. Because I was always told once you give in to somebody like that demands once or twice, then it's going to happen all the time. So I've always kind of fallen more on the side of Donovan was less in the wrong than Terrell Owens by a large margin.
Gotcha. To fast forward to present day and actually go into the future a little bit here, talk a little draft with you here. I know you guys are writing up on it for Inside the Birds for your podcast as well with Adam Kaplan, as well as InsideTheBirds.com. You guys talking about it on your old YouTube channel as well. Jalen Carter, how much of this is real? Obviously, he came by the Eagles per reports. Is there really an attraction there between the Eagles and Jalen Carter?
Well, I mean, Jalen Carter's a defensive tackle. The Eagles lost Javon Hargrave. They prioritized the trenches. He's the top, considered by many to be the top defensive tackle at the position. So it's not, are they interested? Of course, any team that wants a defensive tackle would be interested. You know, the question is, does he get to 10? And I know Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network feels that this recent decree by Drew Rosenhaus that he's not going to visit anybody outside the top 10 is because the Eagles are at 10 and they've already given an assurance that they would pick him, which seems like a strange assurance to make unless, you know, I only say that because what if you're sitting at 10 and Jalen Carter's on the board and three teams give you a call and, you know, offer you a haul? I guess in the long run for Drew Rosenhaus, it doesn't matter. That means he went in the top 10, right?
Sure.
So, but I mean, to automatically assume that the Eagles are going to take him if he's there at 10, probably not a reach, but I would always, there's so many things that happen on draft night. Look at the AJ Brown trade. That thing kind of came up at the last minute. There was no buzz about it. There was no kind of, Howie had tried to sign Allen Robinson and trade for Calvin Ridley before that, all before. So, you know, that wasn't something that was in the works for quite a while. I just think the question would be, does Jalen Carter make it to 10? And the one thing I would add from an Eagles perspective is that lately, I would say probably since Howie got power restored after the Chip Kelly era, he has put a lot of precedence on good character, good citizenship out of his first and second round picks. He has taken some gambles in the sixth and seventh round on guys who maybe have maturity issues or character red flags or whatever. And I'm not saying that I know all about Jalen. All I know about Jalen is what everybody else has seen with what happened at Georgia and the car and the death and everything like that. And then there are, of course, reports this or that. I don't know. When I talk to people, I just talk about his talent and abilities, and he's very good. But if any of that is true, or if the Eagles have seen what happened there and feel like from a character standpoint that there's a real question there, then that's going to factor into their decision. And like I said, their history of first and second round, day one, day two picks, is to really focus on character.
We're a couple of weeks out. Do you see the Eagles being a team that will be aggressive to trade up using that 10th pick and maybe 30th pick or maybe a second round pick, whatever it might be? Or do you see it more likely that the Eagles trade out of the top 10 or even out of the first round?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they want to trade out of the first round when you got two first round picks, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that Howie is looking at his, you know, draft pick schedule and noticing that those middle rounds, there's no Eagles anywhere for quite a while.
Yeah.
And you know how itchy he gets on draft day in general. So I can't imagine it's going to stay that way. I think he would love it, love it, love it, love it, if one of those top quarterbacks, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, whoever, was still around at 10, so that somebody calls him up and offers him a haul to move down a little bit. I think he would do that in a heartbeat. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, though.
Do you think that they'll move up from 10, or do you think that they'll stay at 10? If they make a pick, let's say, let's not count the 30th pick yet, likelihood that they move up, or like you just said, maybe trade back a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I never rule out anything, because you just don't know who's there and what situations are going on. Or, you know, they could pick up draft picks in a trade tomorrow that we didn't even anticipate that would make it less, you know, urgent for Howie to want to add picks. But as we sit here right now, I would 95% think trade down would be more likely, because this guy is trying to turn over a roster and he has no picks in the middle rounds. I mean, very few. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of considered a draft that is not loaded with top end blue chip talent. Normally in a given year, you'll speak to teams and they'll tell you they got about 13 to 15 guys with first round grades. All right. There's never 32 guys with first. Never. Not once have I ever heard of like everybody picked in the first round had a first round grade. It's just not like that. Mm-hmm. So but this draft has good depth. There are a lot of positions where you feel like you can get yourself, if he's not a 5-time Pro Bowler, he's at least a 3 to 5 to 7 year starter in round 2 and round 3 and round 4. So you want to be able to capitalize on that when you're trying to turn over your roster as much as the Eagles have to.
You mentioned the A.J. Brown thing just kind of coming together at the draft last year. When I think about a draft day trade, I don't necessarily think about anything with that 10th overall pick. I think the Eagles will stay in that spot, and I think they'll have a shot at least to Jalen Carter there. But if they don't get that guy, the guy they're rumored to be interested in here, you could be looking at maybe trading that 30th overall pick, and the name I keep seeing come up now is Jeffrey Simmons. Do you see the Eagles trading for a proven commodity like Jeffrey Simmons and then maybe getting a later round pick, like a 4th round pick, in a deal like that and trying to acquire that proven talent?
So many layers of that onion to peel back. So
you ain't kidding.
You're Titans GM Rand Carthon, right? And the guy just got fired, who was a pretty good GM. I mean, it's not like Tennessee has had like all this great blue chip talent. They've had Derrick Henry and some good defensive players, and they've always overachieved, right? And the guy hit on some picks, John Robinson. But he makes a trade to the Eagles, giving away a really good player, a Pro Bowl caliber player, right? Even though he got a 1st round pick, and then he gets fired. All right, you're going to be the guy to trade Jeffrey Simmons, a really good player, to the Eagles, and hope to get a 1st round pick. And by the way, Jeffrey Simmons is a really good player, so I'm not sure that the 30th pick is enough to get him, because he has been a 1st round pick who's played to 1st round pick level. Like I said, when you're talking 30th overall pick, you're talking about a player that most teams are going to have graded as a early to mid 2 at that point. All right. So I don't know that the 30th overall pick gets it done unless there's some kind of ultimatum between the player and the agent, get me out of here type situation that we don't know about.
Do you have a guy that you're looking at right now in this draft that it's almost the guy that you would really love to see in maybe at some point, Kelly Green, this season?
Well, I'll give you a guy who I think like sort of screams Eagle type of player, right? And that's the Pitt defensive tackle, Kalijah Kancey. A little bit undersized, but the Eagles have shown you over the last few years that while they are a very traits-based team and they're a very analytics-based team, there are some exceptions. Right. Landon Dickerson has got to be a medical analytics exception with all the injuries that he had. Devontae Smith didn't run a 4.2 at Alabama, and he weighed 180 pounds. So that's sort of a size exception that you would make that goes against the analytics rule. Right. Kalijah Kancey, he's like 5'9", 5'10", but he's got such upfield burst. I mean, how often do we talk about Eagles needing defensive tackles and looking for guys that get up the field and
high motor
quarterback? High motor, exactly. So now he's kind of a guy. Do you pick him at 10? It's almost like, is it too early at 10? Is it too late at 30? Again, that's where the trade down scenario comes in. But I wouldn't, you know, I don't think it's an overreach if you really have him that graded that high to take him at 10. He's a really good, productive player, and he fits exactly what you need. And then I'll give you one other name, because Greg Cosell has been doing a show with us, The Intel with Greg Cosell, and he loves, absolutely loves Mazi Smith, the defensive tackle out of Michigan, to the point where I asked him, and this is going to be coming out Wednesday morning. I said, well, you're speaking so glowingly of him. Why isn't he considered right up there with Jalen Carter? And he said, I don't know. He thinks he's, you know, athletically, productively, and just as good or as seemingly in that echelon of a player. And I don't know if how much Big Ten – I watch a lot of Big Ten football. I'm a Penn State guy, as you know. Every time I watch the Michigan game, Mark, all you do is hear this guy's name, Mazi Smith. Defensive tackles don't make a lot of actual tackles, right? They push pockets. They open up for the linebackers. But he had almost as many tackles this year as some linebackers have. I mean, he's just that athletic, that twitchy, that good, which is not words usually describe like twitchy and explosive for a defensive tackle. Wouldn't shock me if he's a top half of the first round guy.
As we stand here, very much in free agency, a little bit of buzz, not a lot going on right now. That run has happened. Now we're concentrating on the draft. What do you see as right now the biggest glaring need for the Eagles?
Well, most people who listen to Inside the Birds know that I go on these like really long rants about how this team never drafts safeties early. And so I've come to like grips with it. They're just not going to draft a safety in that. Like I knew they weren't going to take Kyle Hamilton when he was on the board last year. I know that. So we'll set that aside. I have the same rant about cornerback as well, Mark, but they've got Bradbury and Slay. So they're at least all right there. But I think defensive tackle is really the spot. I mean, you look at, you've got Jordan Davis. And I think that there's some question marks, some fair question marks about what to expect from Jordan Davis in year two, right? You bring Fletcher Cox back to play one spot next to Jordan Davis. Who's playing the other spot, that other interior tackle spot?
You know, like Kadavious Street? You know, like a perennial Pro Bowler Kadavious Street?
Well, you know, right now he might be the guy, and that's
He's a body.
Right. Or it's Milton Williams, who they've always viewed as a nice rotational tackle. I mean, I think, you know, the Eagles, they want a stud there. They want a guy that they can pencil in for 7 to 10 sacks a year there, like Fletcher Cox, like Hargrave, like guys before that, you know, Mike Patterson. Why I think everything starts up front for the Eagles, the way they build their defense. I could sit here and tell you linebacker because they lost both starters and only N'Kobe Dean is going to be in that spot. But if you have a better linebacker than Nick Morrow or whoever, Christian Ellis, but you're weak in the defensive line and you can't keep that better linebacker clean, it ain't going to matter much. So it all starts up front.
While we're talking about the defense, though, what does Sean Desai do? Like, did we just go, copy and paste what Jonathan Gannon did and just put Sean Desai's name on it? What does he do? What do you know about him? What have you learned about him? What can we expect from him?
Now, you can get away with saying the whole copy and paste and do it because right now you're just on a virtual computer screen. There's nobody to throw a hatchet at your face. Nobody to use your picture. Your actual face is a dartboard.
Not yet.
Because you said it, not me. That's right. All I'm going to say.
But I'm asking the question.
It's a fair question.
Right. But we don't know anything. We know his resume.
Yeah.
But in terms of what he's going to bring to the table, what do you think?
I defy you to ask me that question if you and I were doing a show from like a local restaurant and there was a crowd there and verbalize it that exact way. And then you have to make me answer it. Because what if my answer is yes? Like it's a lot like Jonathan. Then I got to be the one to get beat up after the show. Come on.
It was, you know what? It was sort of, but not as much in the vein of the line from Office Space. So what is it you say you do here? What is it you say you do? It's sort of in that same vein, but like he is a mystery guy. Like he doesn't have a lot of experience as a defensive coordinator. Like, and even in the role that he had in Seattle, he was kind of in the, I hate to say it, but like backwoods. Like he wasn't at the forefront of everything. So I'm just curious. Here's the easier way to say it. Here's the nicer, polite way to say it. What are your expectations of the type of defense he's going to run?
Well, Mark, I'll tell you what I expect from Sean Desai. I think that he will run he was in Chicago when Vic Fangio was the defensive coordinator there. So he obviously has a lot of Fangio influence because when Vic left to become head coach of the Broncos, was it? Then
yes.
Sean Desai became defensive coordinator. But people should remember that he had been with the Bears when John Fox was there. And before that, Mel Tucker, when they had Mark Trestman as a head coach. So it's not like he's solely influenced by
Fangio.
Vic Fangio. And this is not like, to me, like the whole, you remember like how if Sean McVay like said hello to you one day, you were automatically a head coach candidate. You know, it feels that way with Vic Fangio lately. Like if you know Vic Fangio, if you have a V and a C in your name, you're like automatically going to get a defensive coordinator job in the NFL or a head coach. But with Sean, yes, he's going to run Fangio concepts. If you look at his blitz percentage, it's very similar to Jonathan Gannon's in his 1 year. Now, that's 1 year sample size. Jonathan was only really two. So it's a small sample size. In some of the film I've seen of the Bears defense from when he was a coordinator, I do think you saw a little bit more creative, like line deployments, overloads, different kind of, it's not like they just lined up in the same spot. And I'm not saying Gannon did that too, but the most that you would see is maybe Hassan Reddick move around a little bit and an occasional blitz that wasn't really the most exotic blitz you've ever seen. It was just a blitz, right? So there's obviously a lot of questions to be answered by Sean, but from what I've seen, I think what you'll see is a little bit more diversity in his personnel deployment that will make it a little more confusing as to figure out where is he trying to generate pressure from.
Understood. Overall, gut feeling on this offseason. I know there was a big hubbub with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and what the Eagles offered and versus what they said they offered, what Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's camp said that they offered and all that stuff. Overall, what is your vibe on the offseason? Do you feel like good things are still to come for the Eagles in the upcoming season? How are you feeling this offseason's playing out so far?
Well, the number one vibe is that, remember, at this time last year, you know, the Eagles didn't have James Bradberry and they didn't have Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right? And then in 2017, at this time, they didn't have LeGarrette Blount, and I'm not even sure they had Chris Long at that point yet. They certainly didn't have Ronald Darby. So my takeaway is, if you're panicked, which, you know, I think Eagles fans saw last year, and they get it now, you know that Howie's always going to work to improve the roster up until literally the week before the first game. And so when I look at this defense, and we joked about Kentavious Street being a starter and Nick Morrow might be, and who knows who's starting at safety. I mean, Justin Evans is interesting signing, but he missed three straight years fully for injuries. So I would say you got a draft. You have more signings available. You have the trade market. You have the cutdown day, waiver wire cutdown day. So there's more opportunities to improve the roster. But, Mark, I would say you may not be as good as you were last year on defense. That's okay. You can't be the same every year. But offensively, this team should be really good still because almost the entire offense is back. I mean, a new right guard, yeah. New running back, lead running back, yeah. But for the most part, the guys that make the offense go, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, Dallas Goedert, and most of that offensive line is back. And that's a great luxury to have.
And, you know, in honor of last year, I'll just ask you this question. Is Jalen Hurts the guy?
Nah, of course he's the guy. But, you know, like, this is a weird league. I believe he's going to be the quarterback for a long time, and I think he's a great leader. He's proved a lot of people wrong. I didn't expect such a quick ascent from him at all. But, you know, who saw, like, Carson Wentz taking a step? Now, just because it happened to Carson doesn't mean it's going to happen to everybody else. But there's a couple of – who saw Russell Wilson just completely falling off the face of the earth as a quarterback and collapsing like this? Maybe some people did. I didn't. I thought he was going to be pretty decent in Denver. So I don't expect that of Jalen at all. But this is a league where the things that you don't expect always seem to be lurking right around the corner.
No, I'm with you there 1,000%. Make sure you guys check out the latest installment of Inside the Birds podcast, dropping at the time we air this today, Wednesday, correct, sir?
Yes. Well, it'll be out 6 a.m. Wednesday. So, yeah, the same time, right?
Well, there you go. So, registered.
Technology is really crazy, man.
It's crazy how that works. From Inside the Birds Empire, Jeff Mosher, catch the new episode of Inside the Birds, also with Adam Kaplan as well. Make sure you guys also catch Q&A, Quinn Michael, Jason Mabon, and all the fun festivities. Greg Cosell breaking it all down as well with the Inside the Birds Empire. Jeff Mosher, thanks so much, brother.
That would be King Jeff Mosher. King, it's an King. Empire. Right? You're the sir.
I'll go with Caesar. Hail Caesar. Jeff Mosher.
Thank you. That's appropriate.
Jeff Mosher joining us here on the Rothman Orthopedics guest line. Thanks, Jeff.
See you guys.
My thanks to Jeff Mosher for joining us on the Rothman Orthopedics guest line. Thanks, Mosh. Make sure you guys check out all things Mosh Caesar. Hail Caesar. On Inside the Birds. Does a great job. Him, Adam Kaplan. Phenomenal job over on that network. My old friend Trey Thomas
Greg Cosell. Everyone does a bang up job over there. So make sure you guys check them out. And make sure, I don't know what you guys want in your Easter basket. Ah, Bona Pasqua for those that celebrate. How about a little Manscaped trimmer and the Platinum Package 4.0? That's right, the Platinum Package 4.0 from Manscaped. You can trust Manscaped and their skin safe technology that helps you manscape with confidence and comfort. Their Platinum Package 4.0 includes their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, but wait, there's more. Their Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer. Yeah, those guys getting up there in age, hair growing in some weird places. Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer. You're welcome. Go to manscaped.com, get 20% off and free shipping with promo code Farzy. That's promo code Farzy at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. Enjoy Manscaped. Join 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. How about this? How about the great people at Freestone Farm CBD? FreestoneFarmCBD.com. You like Freestone Farms? You'll love Freestone Farms. How about that? They're amazing. They're absolutely incredible. You'll love their tropical tasting Bayox that clocks in at a chart topping 24.1% and Super CBD, which is half Hindu, Kush, and 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So check out Freestone Farm CBD and get 20% off with promo code Farzy. All their premium hemp flower as well is grown in the Garden State. So you're supporting local business. Freestone Farm CBD, freestonefarmcbd.com. How about the people at PHL Sports Station, Philadelphia Sports Nation, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's phlsportsnation.com. Let's get on over to the chat, check and see how you beautiful people are doing on this fine morning. Let's start it over on the Farzy YouTube page here. See how you guys are doing. Mally, what's popping? Fuji, what's going on? Happy hump day, Mark. Good folks. Joe brought it last night. Fightins with their first win. Yesterday was a good day. Flyers lost, but yesterday was a good day. Joel Embiid fadeaway shot is beautiful. So I counted it up. All right, I meant to do this before the show, but it slipped my mind. And Miss Cousy. Joel Embiid had 11 shots. Hit 11 shots from inside the paint or within a foot of the paint last night, according to his shot chart. That's all outside. I'm not even including what he did in the semicircle. The thing that's making me go bonkers about last night's game is how hard and aggressive he was in attacking the rim, which is more aggressive than he's. It's not to say that he's ever lackadaisical about going after the rim or being aggressive in that regard, but just that last night I saw that was a very heightened part of his game. And then what he did mid-range game was insane. What he did in the paint was insane. Outside the semicircle, but within the paint or a step out was beautiful from him last night. 11 shots. That were in the paint, not the semicircle. Fantastic play from Joel Embiid last night. All around. Let's hear it for Joel Embiid. April, my man has the most ragged. Oh, ragged edge up I've ever seen. He's definitely playing with that chip on his shoulder, that's for sure. Mally Food, hello, April. Hey, hello, A. Hey, I never said anything bad about PJ Tucker. I was thinking it last 2 days ago. No, actually, it was as far ago as last week. I was doing the show with Colin Thompson, who does the Not For Long Network, local product, tight end, most recently with the Panthers, now a free agent. But he had me on his show, and he was asking me about success for the Sixers, what's it going to take? And I'm like, it's going to take playoff P.J. Tucker. That's what you're going to need, playoff P.J. Tucker. The guy that nobody wants to look up and see guarding. Oh, I got P.J. Tucker on me today? Damn it. No one wants to see P.J. Tucker guarding him. And then, on top of that, a guy hitting corner threes? That's playoff P.J. Playoff P.J. Tucker. But yeah, he was on one last night. And when he started knocking down corner threes, I was like, wow. They might just have this. They don't have much from Maxey tonight. They certainly don't have much from Toby tonight. PJ Tucker's going to be the guy to step up. Have at it, Bull. Have at it. Mally, he needs to have that tattoo hairline toucher. Come on, Mally. Hey, good morning. Good morning to you, hey, Kevin. Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, Farzy Show and everybody. Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. Mally, 20 for 25 from the floor. Man was cooking last night. He certainly was. Sean Gillespie, good morning. Good morning to you. Damn, that 10% really mattered in the Super Bowl. Arg. Sean Gillespie says, of Jonathan Gannon. It does. It did. The 90% really helped you, though, throughout the season. Not ignore that. What we're asking for is be a perfect defensive coordinator. Not even be a perfect defensive. If you just have 5% more of adjustment to Jonathan Gannon, you're going to do great things. You're going to do great things. The bench still scares the hell out of me. Mal, you're talking about the Sixers? They still scare me, too. I am not unafraid of the bench coming in. I will say, and DeAnthony Melton has certainly gotten his starts recently, and he certainly had a long stretch of starts there, but DeAnthony Melton coming off the bench. The possibility of having George Niang's threes coming off the bench is nice. Paul Reed is playing. I mean, speaking about guys that play aggressive, I saw Paul Reed last night get that I'm trying to think if it was a turnover or it was a rebound. I think it was a turnover that he got on the defensive end of the floor around the top of the key, and then all of a sudden he had a fast break, one on none, straight ahead to the basket. I forget who it was with the Celtics that caught up to him, but he got nothing out of it. Our boy got nothing out of it. Love you, Paul Reed. And then it went the other way for 2 points. So it was unfortunate. But Paul Reed had 2 points right there in front of him, and it didn't work out, unfortunately. That's our boy. That's our boy, Paul Reed. Boop. Melly, hello, Sean. Melly, every time I see Seth Joyner on TV, I always feel like I'm about to get in trouble. Seth does have that high school disciplinarian aura about him. But I will tell you this. I've gotten to know Seth Joyner over the last handful of years, and I love being around that guy. Absolutely love being around that guy. He's a great dude. Mally's been so scary. It does. Sean Gillespie, hello again. April, that Howie interview was great. Oh, the Kelce Brothers podcast? Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Morning, Mark. Hey, Mihai Sanchez. What's going on? Morning, Mark. Everyone, when Schwarber sets the tone, we rolling. Embiid is just a machine. Union get the shutout win. The Union did win last night. Flyers took the loss. Great not to be a Philly sports fan, but should we have high hopes? Yes. Yes, you should have high hopes. I'll tell you what my hopes are. I'll be cut and dry and very blunt with my hopes. But if I'm telling you to do what to do with your hopes, I mean, I try not to, but reach for the skies, baby. Reach for the stars. Was it John Lennon? Was it the John Lennon quote that said, always shoot for the moon? Even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars. Oh, wow. It probably wasn't even him. It was probably that Socrates fella. Eh? Or that Confucius fella. I know it's Socrates. Come on. I know it's pronounced Socrates, but I think it was John Lennon who said that quote. I feel it shouldn't always be to have high hopes. There we go. There you go, April. That's how you say it. Even if we shouldn't have high hopes, we always have high hopes. April, you and me. Who do we got here? Matthew Cronin. What's up, Matthew? Who will make their ML debut faster? McKinley Moore or Andrew Painter? I thought Weston Wilson would make the roster. Oh, okay. I think McKinley Moore will make his big league roster. By the way, he joined us about a year ago. About a year ago, the Phillies made the trade, Adam Haseley, and got McKinley Moore. McKinley Moore was on this show talking about his big league dream of being a big league closer. So we'll play those cuts for you tomorrow during tomorrow's show. I think our boy McKinley Moore makes his debut before Payne or anybody else. PJ weighs in on the thing. By the way, for those on Jacob Media, and I'll hop over to your comment section in a second, but those on Jacob Media, PJ is producer Jim Hayden, who produces the program, just so you guys know. But he also controls the Farzi Show account, so he answers Matthew here saying, ooh, that's a good question. I think Andrew Baker gets a shot if anybody else struggles and gets hurt. Not a bad question. I like Andrew Baker. But in terms of MLB first, do you go McKinley Moore over Painter? I mean, Painter, I don't really know when he's coming back. McKinley Moore? Makes his debut first? I agree. I mean, Mike Fuji, you got it. The question to be asked is about Sean Desai. Sean Kilray, what's up, buddy? Boop. PJ Tucker putting on a clinic last night in the corner. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Mets did get stomped last night. I wanted to bring that up in the morning rush, but I actually was going to – forgot that I even wanted to write that down. But, yeah, they did get stomped. They were on at least a 19 – getting outscored 19 to nothing at one point over a couple of games with the Brewers, if I'm not mistaken. Always good to see them be terrible at baseball. Yeah, they lost 9 to nothing last night. The Mets did. That's fantastic. I'll take that. Weston Wilson would make the roster thoughts. We all win when the Mets lose. You're damn right. What's up there, everybody? Tajay Spears, hot name for the middle rounds. There you go, Jacob Sports. Sammy Livingston, I don't see a running back. I see a running back later in the draft. I'm with my man John McMullen on that. I don't even know who it's going to be yet, but I know they're going to take a flyer on a mid-draft pick as their running back. I don't think it happens in the second round. Maybe it happens in the third. I do see the Eagles trading out of the first round with their 30th pick. They pick at 10. I think they pick at 10, and then I see them trading back with their 30th pick. They'll do that in hopes that they can land a running back, at really any other prospect that's going to be on there that they feel like they can help them win. But they'll just do that for more assets, essentially. I hate to use that word, but that's what they use it for. As far as a specific running back, no. Robinson is not a guy I see coming to Philadelphia. I know a lot of people are pumped up about him. I do not see Robinson coming here, and I know a lot of people like him, but I don't see the Eagles using first round picks on a running back. That's not something that we'll see, but later in the draft they will select a running back. When I was having this conversation 2 weeks ago with John McMullen was telling me that the leading rusher on the Eagles is not on the Eagles right now. So Rashad Penny, not going to be the guy. Kenny Gainwell, not going to be the guy. Boston Scott, not going to be the guy. The guy who's going to be the guy is whoever they draft. Whoever they get in free agency, I don't even know who that is. I think it's going to be Kenny Gainwell as their leading rusher. I think Rashad Penny will be the leading touchdown scorer. But I don't think you're going to have a running. I don't think that they're going to draft a running back that will all of a sudden break out on the scene. I don't think they're going to sign a running back that is going to break out on the scene. If I'm asked that question again, I still have the same answer 2 weeks later. The leading rusher on this team will be Kenny Gainwell. But I do think that they take a flyer on the guy later in the draft because they need to bolster their backfield just a wee bit. Thanks to everybody in the chat. You guys are great as per usual. Let's get to that morning rush brought to you by Sky Motorcars, skymotorcars.com. Philly's back at 105 start time today. Aaron Nola against Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole has yet to allow a run. He tossed with a 7 scoreless in his first start of the season. Aaron Nola, of course, was not tossing 7 scoreless. 6 scoreless for Garrett Cole in his first start of the season. So he goes up against the Phils today. Phillies go for their first series win of the season. Look at that. Talking about getting their first win, and now talking about getting the Phillies their first series win of the season. And then they got their home opener coming up tomorrow in South Philadelphia. Look forward to that. So Phillies will go for 2 in a row today. What do the Mets have? While we're enjoying it. Yeah, 19 to nothing. They haven't scored a run in this Brewers series yet. That's the number I was looking at. So after taking care of business with the Florida Marlins, Miami Marlins, winning 3 of 4 to start out the season, they go to Milwaukee, and they lose their first 2 games without scoring a run, being outscored 19 to nothing in that first game. So that's what you got. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you guys tomorrow. Talk a little bit more Eagles football. For Jim Heider, produced program, did a wonderful job. Have a great day. Have a great day, guys. See ya.